The desert stretching out before you. There are few tracks because the sand drifts over them. But somewhere out there, you know there's a particular set of tracks anyone would mistake for a divot blown in the sand, for a small depression. But what it really is the slithering S-shaped pattern of a tail moving across the sand, trailing toward a certain cave, a certain darkened place laden with potential and fantasy. And you see it, and you know its significance, and so you follow it because you want to know. Well, really, we know there's the fantasy in there. A snake lady, stronger, larger, controlling, guiding, informing, instructing, training, conditioning you. But that's hardly the thing you say to somebody right from the get-go. You'll have to see what happens. You tread across the sand, following the slithering trail, watching with your eyes as it moves left and right, left and right. A slithering progress, step after step across warm dunes, your mind falling and following. You feel more vacant as you follow. This simple, monotonous task has given your mind an opportunity to fantasize, to think of pleasure, to think of the ache, the throb, the possibility. And so you follow the trail, slithering left and right, left and right, following. Eventually, you spot where it vanishes into the shade of a dune. The dune is surrounded on all sides by many others, and few people would come out this way, unless they knew that was a trail. No mere depression dragged in the dirt, but a trail, and you following across the blistering sand, warm, nourishing, find yourself peeking around the dune. And there is a rocky entrance, an outcropping revealing that this dune is sand laid over a hill of rock, rather than merely a pile. And the entrance has those tracks, those long, slithering tracks flowing into it, many from all directions. You peek around and you hear both the distant sound of water, unusual here, babbling over rocks, and a hiss that only your discerning ear, knowing the nature of what you will soon encounter, can pick out among the din. You have chosen this path and everything that goes with it. You have chosen to explore this road into a place untraveled by those walking on two legs. And so, you go in. The darkness and the coolness touches your skin. A pleasant relief after the desert air. You notice a slope going downward. No stairs here. Why would there be? You follow it, moving along that trail, down into the dark, and the dark crowds around. The only light down here is reflected from the surface, striking colored stones in the wall on the way down the tunnel. Here one is red. A little further, one is blue. Past that, green. Each casts small patches of light on the road down into the tunnel. But this seems to be incidental. The kind of creatures that live here have no trouble with their senses in the darkness. You, on the other hand, do tread through an inky, almost relaxing dark after the glare of the sun out on the dunes, and the warmth on your skin has faded to a coolness discovered only underground, but nonetheless, the presence perhaps of many milling bodies, the source of that hissing, is exactly what has kept it a little warm, comfortably warm, on this progress down the tunnel. They aren't necessarily cold-blooded out here. They could once have been more like you and have retained some of those traits. You reach what seems to be a plateau at the bottom of the ramp, and you look in to a vast cavern. Its walls are perfectly smooth, no natural shape. This was clearly carved here by some force greater than you can imagine. And within, there is, indeed, a river. A brook running down the middle. And in it, there are those gems, those same ones you felt, the warmth of the sun reflected from on the walk down the tunnel, reds and blues and greens, and they cast light back from luminescent white shards embedded into various buildings, and there are buildings. A path from the ramp leads to the center of what appears to be a city. But while we would usually think of an underground city as a ruin, these buildings are well upkept. To your left, upon entering, you notice a broad concourse, a road of tiled, well-kept stone, tearing up a long slope inside the cavern. And all alongside it, on terrace after terrace, are white marble buildings. They're carved in a distinct architectural style. There are columns, there are statues. At the top of that path, far, far up a hill, is a semicircle of stone mounted on top of eight pillars arranged in that semicircle underneath. And then, below, you can see marble benches laid out. A kind of Parthenian structure behind that makes your mind reel at the possibilities. Who could upkeep so finely? How could there be so much down here? Then your attention is drawn to the right, and you see something different. Spires, fluted buildings with their tops covered in strange crenellations. The whole structure bespeaks one huge palace. There are silks hanging from awnings. There is a marketplace, and this is the first time you notice figures milling around. Dozens, maybe more, visible moving from stall to stall, trading wares. You spot that the ruts you followed here are not just the ruts of snake people moving across the sand, but the ruts of wagons as well. Someone's been pulling merchant carts here. And some of the merchants at those stalls are human. A second bazaar, a hidden place. You can look at their wares another day, but right now curiosity overcomes, and so does that hidden, secret, shameful urge to be overtaken, that willing desire to submit. And they are all so much larger and stronger, with long, sinuous tails. And you look at a few of them, and then walk down an alleyway. A few do spot you, but they don't seem to necessarily say anything or move toward you. You just manage to slip away. An alleyway lit by those white shards that are ubiquitous, those sources of light which then gets rebounded into the gems you can find everywhere. The side with the white marble buildings was a little bit less covered in gemstones. It preferred the white stone that glowed with the marble. But here, gems are everywhere. Gold and brass, especially brass, and the rebounded light of the occasional flaming brazier. For it is a little cooler down here, and there are places that are dark, or have not been lit yet. Yes, yet, because there's ongoing construction. Scaffolding made of wood. In several places, buildings being built up, stone being hauled, the slithering of creatures on this side with the ropes around their stomachs, wrapped to pieces of stone, dragging them over the sand, for the floor of this cavern is entirely sand. You look closely at one of the snake creatures that lives here, yes, a sinuous snake body, and then a normal human woman's chest and belly. Some of them are covered in silk scarves or wrapped brassieres, but very few things really keep you from getting an eyeful. Slender shoulders are on display, the occasional jeweled necklace. All of them tend to have long hair, a few wear shorter, and they're dressed in the same colors you saw in the cave coming down. Reds and greens and blue silks predominate. Occasionally you see a swatch of purple, but it's always just a scarf, just an accent. Some wear headscarves, their long hair in every color you can imagine, and they slither to and fro. All of the women, at least over here on the side with the marketplace and the palace with its towers, at least over here, they're all what would be classified as Lamia. From the waist up, they're human women, although they have no ears to see, just small protrusions on the sides of their head for sound to enter, and they all have long, flicking tongues that periodically taste the air. And sure, their eyes are slitted, their nails are long, but they are demonstrably human. Except the snake from the waist down. And the slither of them sets up a sound. You realize it wasn't them hissing you heard on the way down, for they speak in human voices. Rather, on the way down, you heard the slither of tails across sand. Many tails moving. Many things. You follow. You sink. You can't really help it here. You are underground, and the slithering produces a wonderful white noise in the background. You have to see more. Your mind's already locked into that. And so, uninterrupted, you head along a back alleyway, little populated. You notice a small shop set into the wall of the cavern, as if it had been here before anyone else came here. It has no sign, just an open door, and what you see are a bunch of racks of merchandise inside. No, you'll check that some other day. You walk onward. Toward the walls of the palace. They're in a sandy brown stone and very high. But the palace isn't really the closed sort. You see a gate off a wide road to your left, with two guards standing by it. They're unarmed, but Alamia doesn't really need much in the way of armament. Their wrestling skills are second to none. A thought that makes you titillated and warm. You keep moving and find a servant's entrance along the back wall. Yes, you could slip in there. You slide open the wooden door and step into kitchens. They're unoccupied at this time of day. Must not be mealtime. There is a door beyond, and a guard. She is seated, or rather, she has curled her coils beneath her and is resting her human half against a cushioned display stand. In the display is a scimitar, and above it some inscription. Rather than read it, you capitalize on this opportunity, you can't help it. The door beyond her looks important. There's purple silk, yes, that purple motif again, hanging in the doorway. You push aside those diaphanous curtains, you push inside and find a red carpet with blue trim. You walk on it. It will muffle your footsteps after all. Walk and walk. You see ahead a broad circular room with a few of those brown sandstone steps going down into a depression. There are tons of pillows, huge pillows, so comfortable looking. In blues and reds and greens, scattered to different corners, the room is divided that way. Blue gems, red gems, green gems, a huge white crystal sphere in the center that is relatively dim, but the light cast back by all of the other gems helps. And some kind of tripod table has been settled above the white sphere with a glass top. So the white light pours through that as well and lights the ceiling. It's quite an attractive display. Someone clearly decorated this space. You hear hissing and slithering from a vast chamber connected to this one, but no one's in here. It must be some kind of sitting room. There are low tables along with the cushions, and on top of the glass is a sort of fluted pipe, peculiar to look at. It's a large basin for water, like a potion bottle, but huge, and there's a stopper or a cork in the top, with a few holes connected to tubing, and that tubing, which looks rubbery, runs out to a number of holstered pipettes. They look like they're meant to be breathed in, and indeed smoke bubbles above the water in the core of this device. The smoke is purple, a light, colored, purple smoke. The white light from below is dim and filters through it, giving it the look of illumination from within. But you can see that it also has a light all its own. There's some kind of herbs or incense in compartments connected to the pipe. It's clearly meant to replenish itself and keep going, and it may very well do so through magic. After all, this place is full of creatures known for having some magical potential, inarguably the most corrupted space in the entirety of this world. And so you walk toward it. So you move toward that pipe. Captivated. Eyes locked on it. The smoke swirling with potential. Indeed, swirling's the right word. You wanted to be here, and now you've stumbled upon something. You don't quite know what, but it must be important. It was guarded. And probably sacred in its own way. Very few people try to get in here, or the guard wouldn't be asleep. Beyond, you see a door to a kitchen. And you spot women there. Four of them. Snake portions fitted. Behind a small table there in the kitchen, one of them serving the three others, each of them dressed in fine silks, one in red, one in blue, one in green. The fourth one's off to the side. You can only see her lower body. The three spot you, and they smile. You hear a faint giggle as they look at you, but they don't move to come toward you. You freeze in place, and your eyes are drawn back to the purple light ascending from what you realize is a pipe meant to be smoked, a hookah laid on the table. You look back at them. They rise slowly. You feel a dim predatory sense. As if you were caught in the eyes of some predator, caught in her gaze. You feel that sense prey animals feel. But you stand still. They slither a little bit closer. High above, out on the dunes, the moonlight is there. There is something out there that can detect you down here. There's something that's been guiding you, and your mind is caught in the red, the blue, the green of it. Your eyes are caught in theirs. They slither closer. The one in the kitchen keeps doing what she's doing. You hear the clanking of pots, but the red, blue, and green-dressed Lamia move closer. They have veils, but the veils are thrown back. They have golden tiaras connected to them. They're wearing clothing that's entirely see-through. It barely covers anything. It's slightly thicker gauze around the nipples and right between their legs where a slit would be above the snake parts, but you can really detect everything and it makes you sigh happily. Their curves are just so beautiful. The potential of their control is so teasing. You're drawn to their look. They walk closer. Well, they slither. You see the marks it leaves on the sand, for even here there is sand on the ground under all the pillows, but it is comfortable and fine and white, a higher quality than what was outside. And clearly as they move through it, they are very graceful in this space. They must be here often. Where their belly buttons would be revealed, there are instead jeweled diadems there covering them, simple jewelry, a red, a blue, and a green gem for each of them. They move closer and move into colored portions of the room. Ah, harem politics. They must be dividing this room to each have their own portion. I guess when one is as large as a monster girl can be like this, it is appropriate to have your own personal space and be able to retreat to it. You are thus caught in the middle of them. In fact, two of them are joining hands closer to the exit, foreclosing any possibility of you running past them and out of the door. Not that you're quite able. Your legs are doing nothing, and the air in here, you now notice, is a little bit smoky. Then, one of them slithers up to the pipe, the one who's not holding hands, the one in blue, and she grasps it. As she picks one of the pipettes from its holster, one of the inhalation ports, the water in the bottom of the pipe begins to bubble and the purple smoke flows up the tube. She brings it to her own lips and breathes deeply in. In the kitchen, you can see the hands of some much larger Lamia ladling out portions for each of them. But no call has been made for them to return. And indeed, The figure in the kitchen filters away through some other door, leaving you here with these three. The one in blue breathes the smoke deep. Her eyes close. She doesn't seem quite able to prevent that. And then she exhales a cloud toward you. Purple smoke. You breathe in incredibly deeply. The moment, the very moment, it touches your nose, you have to. It's so sweet, it smells like fruit, like fine, rich, slowly filling sensation. Whereas you might normally not be able to tolerate thick, cloying smoke, the thin sweetness of this invades your mind and you breathe deeper. You breathe with a hunger. Your eyes roam back to the purple smoke. You feel your eyes close, but you still see those purple swirls. The two Lamia behind you holding hands, the one in red and in green, wrap their arms around your shoulders. It feels so comfortable, even though you know they have to lean down to do so, and they push you toward the pipe a little. One of them pulls a cushion up and sits you down. You feel the tips of their tails, sinuous as they are, capture your ankles. You see red and blue and green light inside your eyes. You stare into the purple swirling smoke and nod, nod. You begin to see. Your mind begins to see. It sees them as illuminated light rather than the details of their scales, which slightly match the color of their outfits. You see their swaying breasts in your mind. You see how there's just enough of their buttocks that they can sway those too, and they have to when they slither. All this fine detail, all this lust and flesh and these curves fills you. You feel just the residual slightest buzz from the smoke she wafted over you, and purple light is filling your features. You smile. You feel companionable, connected, bonded by this. There's a movement to your right and your left as they reach out for their respective parts of the hookah. One Lamia to your left, one to your right, their breasts pressing against your arms, their bodies reclined in comfortable Lamia sitting position, except they're holding your ankles. They're guiding you to sit, and you do. In fact, anything you're guided to do feels like a good idea. So when the one who just took a drag, her eyes still closed, offers the blue tip of the hookah's hose to you. The blue tip to you, and you suck deeply, and purple smoke flows into your mouth, and you let it be breathed slowly out of your nose. You feel its effects filling your head. You feel hazy and vacant. You're floating. You're seated on a cushion between two huge women who could have their way with you, but you're also floating. There's one in front of you, too. You manage to make your eyes open from the lazy, hazy place you descended to. And that's when you see hers opening. They're spirals of blue light. It might be reflected from the white onto the blue gem at her belly, but her eyes, in your vision, are spiraling. She leans in and you hear her speak human speech, unlike the Naga who've become completely snake-like. How is it? Her dreamy voice. What do you see? You see the smile on her face become more blue light. Her eyes are spiraling, spinning, snake eyes spinning into your mind. Blue light. How is it? What do you see? She waits for you, listens to you, lets you speak. And the act of speaking makes your body so warm. Somehow you know anything you tell her, anything you confess to her, will make you more drugged and drained. The two next to you, who have not yet taken drags from the hookah, say, "Welcome to the harem of the absent king. Welcome to our home." One of them lifts you, bodily, entirely into her arms and lays you across the other's. Well, I guess it would be called a lap. The part of her where her sinuous snake body forms human flesh instead, and she leans back on it. You're laid across their laps. The blue one comes closer, untying her silk sash at the back to reveal her breasts, massive with dark brown nipples. Ascending above your face, sure, but she's rising to her full height. She holsters the end of the hookah she was breathing from. The two that are holding you breathe from theirs. So the blue one took the hookah out of your hand, and the two next to you are occupying them. You find yourself wanting another drag, but you lay there, vulnerable and captured, laid across the lap of the one in green and in red, the jewels at their bellies reflecting those colors into your eyes. The one with the blue spiraling eyes drags your vision back, but the hookah material is already in your body. The smoke, the vacancy, the fruit that you ate of when you breathed deeply is already invading you. What do you see? She's trying to draw that out of you. Anything you confess, the smoke, the vision, the spirals, the eyes, the blue, and now the two holding you have taken long drags, put their hookahs back, and now their eyes open. Red, spiraling light. Green, spiraling light. Uniting with the blue to form white, hot pleasure in your brain. But the purple tinge then overpowers the white, and you see purple smoke in your mind. You want another drag. You try to reach for it. The one in blue smiles, takes it, puts it in your mouth, and you breathe. So deep. You hold it as long as you can, knowing you'll get a more potent hit, knowing that your mind will be captured, and the light is even more. The smoke makes you look at the light, makes you want to look into their eyes, because in this connected place where you're laid across their laps, they're so beautiful. And then the one in blue leans back. You imagine you hear music on the edge of hearing. But perhaps that's just because she sways what passes for her hips. Well, they are hips where her upper body joins the snake form, and she turns a little, doing a spiraling pirouette where her snake body propels forward to form a coil under her, allowing her to pivot and show her rear, which she shakes. You notice she's humanoid back there. You find your eyes drawn as the blue and green light mingles with the red and forms white hot, but the blue woman turns her eyes away, so green and red light bathe her. You watch. She turns and winks over her shoulder. You feel your body getting so hot. The smoke is still in you. You're still breathing it in and out, taking drags on purpose, trying to get it inside. You can't help it. Want it. Long, slow, holding it as long as you can, seeing things, feeling your vision change. You're seeing what's behind reality. The two holding you are red and green light. The blue one is swaying her hips. She's facing away from you, swaying her hips, dancing, moving her belly side to side, her hands clasped in front of her in almost a prayer position, wiggling her shoulders left and right, a sinuous movement like only Lamia could provide. And then she turns, slowly. You see the jewel at her belly button, the blue jewel. You see the red and green ones nearby to you when you turn your head, slowly pulling it away from her spiraling eyes that have come back into vision. The red and green spiraling eyes above you leave no relief. Your body gets warmer. This is what you wanted. This is where you wanted to be. You nod. You find yourself nodding, encouraging them to control you, encouraging them to guide you. And your nods turn into more enthusiastic whimpers, moans, descriptions. Anything you describe to them carries you further. But the blue one's not done. She trails a hand down her breasts. The two holding you wiggle their hips, dancing as well. But their hands are on your shoulders, rubbing, encouraging, turning you toward the blue. The green and red hold you across their lap. You see the blue one trail that hand down past her belly button, down between her legs, or where they would be if she had them, to her jeweled slit. Very humanoid, dripping puffy lips. And yes, jewels, blue jewels, almost embroidered into her, all around her pussy, framing it beautifully, stuck there with some adhesive. The jewels cast blue light back, and you imagine you see the echoes of her spiraling eyes between those lips there, blue light bathing you, her jeweled slit and her protruding clit, so big, you whimper, bite your lip, and think about her clit just as she reaches those fingers from that trailing hand down and grasps it. She's stroking it as if it were a cock, moving it forward, and it's swelling. Your mind feels so happy, so accomplished. It feels so good to witness that blue light, accompanied by the green and red that are tenderly holding you, bathing what is becoming a big, hard cock. You breathe deep from the hookah that she's still left with you. You get so much purple smoke in your brain, but it's making your mouth hungry for something else. It's making you yearn for something else. She squirms closer, swaying her hips, all the while each rhythmic movement robbing you of reason and gifting you to visions, visions you imagine they must see with their eyes spiraling. It's only when she gets a few inches away. You see a blue spiral on her belly. You see a red spiral on her belly. That must be the light from the two above you. You see a blue spiral on the backs of your own eyelids. That must be her gazing at you. But you see a purple spiral on her growing, swollen cock protruding from between her puffy lips. You see a purple spiral. You realize it's coming from you. Your spinning eyes, your mindless spiral eyes, staring at her cock, painting a spiral on the head of it. To bring you deeper, you see fluid dripping from it, faintly purple fluid. You lean, opening your lips, and the two behind you brace your body and hold your head so you can easily do it. The cock is getting closer. You breathe in, you smell the hookah sweetness coming from the blue lamia's flesh as she brings the cock head, faintly purple with your gaze coloring it, brings it to your lips. You lick up the juices. You suck it into your mouth. You groan and swallow. And the swallowing makes your brain buzz. It's so good. The pre-cum is so good. Yes, yes. You capture it in your lips, and then you feel something even better. Poking into the small of your back, the red and the green lamia's own cocks have swollen. You turned them on. It feels so good to know you turned them on. And your brain is just so covered in smoke. You open your mouth and let drool stream out of it, so the one who pushes her cock into your mouth can see how entranced and controlled you are by the drug, by the light, even by your own eyes. You let yourself drool mindlessly. You let your toes curl. Your belly feels so good. You start moaning and babbling nonsense words. You want them to know how controlled you are, how much you're being brought into sync, how the purple is controlling you. You breathe in the purple from her cock. You breathe it in from her slit, which is clearly aroused, and drooling light purple juices as well. You swallow, letting it fill you. You swallow the light and the control, your own eyes hypnotizing you from within. You couldn't look at anything right now without getting controlled by it, and you have the happy smoke in your brain to thank. The hookah's tip is forgotten, cast to the floor, because you have a better thing to take a drag off of. Her big cock in your mouth. You swallow and suck, and the taste is divine, a little salty, a little sweet, sucking, bobbing your head, sucking your own cheeks in. You want her to know how horny you are. You reach down and pull your own clothing off, your pants pulled, pulled. They raise you so you can do it, and then you feel one of their cocks resting against your butt, the other against your back. Your flesh is making them wet and drippy. Their pre-cum, their purple pre-cum, is painting your skin. It's getting even more of it into you, even more control, even more of that mixture of smoke and divine desire. You're being controlled, and you love it. As you suck, you've got to suck. One of your hands finds the cock pressed against your back, and you divinely, warmly stroke it. You want them all to feel good. Oh, oh, they're moaning and gasping and pressing against you, and you get to love it. You see the silk draped on the ceiling as you look left a little because you're turned to the side to suck the big cock of the blue one who's moved in. You see the bejeweled brand on her belly button as well. You see the jewels around her slit, blue light in your brain, purple light in your mind, your own spiral. Wherever you look, you're creating your own purple spiral to draw you in. it makes you feel hallucinatory bliss. Everything seems to just be light. Even people are silhouettes made of light, but her cock is so real and so divine, and in your mouth and the texture, the veins, you lust for it, you love it, you suck it, you serve it, you want it, and you keep sucking. Keep groaning. You want it in you. You want to be controlled by it. The smoke and now long, slow drags of her cock. She pulls it away with a pop from your lips. You moan, groan, whimper for it back. You show her how lustful you are. Your own hands going between your legs while one hand, the other one's occupied, stroking the red one's cock. The green one's pressing her cock against your butt already. The blue one pulls back and begins swaying her hips. You watch as she dances. You feel yourself lifted. Rather than laying across two laps, you're pointing straight up and down, being held in the strong arms of the green one right above her cock. She leans you forward so it's pressed between your buttocks. She leans in and whispers, "What do you see?" You watch the blue one made of light, her blue spiral eyes, the only part of her that isn't pure blue light, her upstanding throbbing cock, and as she sways her hips, as she moves to and fro, her cock begins to spurt. It seems like you had her on edge, and the act of hypnotizing you is making her so hot. She wasn't even stroking it, she's just dancing, swaying, but her cock is spurting. It's dripping and drooling. It's spurting all over your belly, warm, purple-tinted cum. Oh, you reach down a hand and grab it up, bring it to your lips, sucking it from your fingers and palm. Her cum tastes divine. It reminds you of the smoke, the fruit, the salt, the taste of it. And the one behind you says, "Let's give you a gift so you'll come back." She then lowers your butt right over her cock. It's so lubricated from arousal you gave her. You feel proud, curling your toes, rubbing your own body, showing her how turned on you are. You made yourself naked for her. You made yourself high for her. So willing. You will return and you will learn, but you already want it. You've already been told. The head of her cock enters your rear, parting it, spreading you open. It feels so good. She slips just the head inside and you feel a pop, a spreading elasticity as she fills your butt. And as she slides her cock in, you feel your butt slowly falling. The blue one's still dancing. She's capturing you, but the blue of light in your vision is becoming purple. In fact, the red one who's holding you up on the green one's lap is becoming purple in your vision too. You're lowering. The red one's in front of you. She leans down between your legs as you feel more and more of the thick, hard cock enter your ass. The blue one dances her way toward you. Her cock is once more against your lips, but now it's limp and flaccid. Feels like a job well done to have made her so soft. It gets smaller and smaller, receding into her slit. You lean forward and lick the hood. You can't help it. You taste the purple again. You lick the hood and make her pussy feel so good. Your ass is being filled. Oh, you're being bounced and bounced and bounced. You feel thick pre-cum flowing into your ass to lubricate. You're so lubed back there. She's filling you, bouncing you against her breasts, framing your neck with her breasts, her powerful body. Then the red one is in front of you now. You're on the green one's lap. The red one wraps her tail around your body, leaving you free to be fucked, wrapping so that your ass can meet the other one's cock. The blue one's in front of you, swaying, bringing her limp clit inside her slit against your lips. The red one's constricting your lower body, holding it still in place, holding you there. Meanwhile, you feel yourself slowly getting off as you're ground down onto the cock underneath you, filled up with it. Then it happens. From the base of it, it begins to swell. Something warm is coming up inside the green one's cock, which is inside your rear, sliding deeper with its lubricated, pre-cum-slicked surface, putting the purple pre deeper in your brain. You see light inside your head as something flows out the tip of her cock, something big and rounded, feels like a plug, but deeper inside, it flows in. "You're being egged," she whispers, sliding deeper, sliding, sliding. This always was an unconventional harem. She giggles behind you and bounces your rear on her lap, which coaxes another egg and another. You feel so heavy inside. But you let the feeling take you over, overtake you, control you. You're still licking away at the slit of the blue one in front of you. The red one constricts tighter, winding more of her tail higher up around your shoulders. So you're getting a delicate squeezing massage that also makes you unable to even stir your heavy legs. You're bound in place, your own stimulation of afterthought compared to the pleasure of being bound and rebounding and bouncing on the cock behind you in your rear, pumping egg after egg, heavy, heavy below, so good. Pop! She slides out and you feel your ass squeeze shut. You know that deep inside, her eggs are sitting there. Indeed, they send pleasure. They send a warm wave through your belly. It just feels right. All that purple pre inside, all that purple smoke in your head. You sway to and fro on her lap. You lay there, squirming. You feel your eyes still purple, still sending spiraling light across the room, close as your pup pulled away from her cock entirely, laid across all three of their laps as the blue one tugs her clit away from your mouth and joins them behind you. You're laid over their laps, as it were, but they loop their arms under you. They rise on their slithering snake bodies as one, the red and blue and green light across the room occupying your brain as you see them as wraiths of light, as images of light in the hallucinatory world you've been sent to by a little too much smoke. The blue one reaches down fastidiously to return the hookah end to its holster, and then she and the other two slither you off toward the kitchen. We'll take you to see the matron. Those eggs will stay until the next time you masturbate, but your brain, the next one picks up, is already being reshaped. Soon you'll want to do, the last one, what we want to do. They're all connected, and the light, the red, the blue, the green, is now purple, joining the purple from your eyes, all of them mingling, forming a pillar of light coming up from you as they carry you across their shared arms down the hall toward some destination. You cuddle up against their breasts, feeling them, six breasts against your body, three breathing warmly, three mouths lean down to kiss your shoulder and your side and just near your butt, and they kiss and then rise up. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Their voices don't really hiss, that's more a Naga thing, but there is this sultry purr in the back of them that separates them from the entirely human, and their eyes still glow. They move slowly, protractedly, as if they were high. You definitely are. And all of you, together, go to prepare. If you turn down an alleyway in a certain underground city on the right day, and you ignore distractions like alluring market stalls, a hidden shop that changes destination day after day, a sleeping guard, you might find yourself in the harem of the absent queen. You might find yourself there, a little absent-minded. You might find yourself there, a little vacant within. You might find yourself there to stay.